Welcome to the mikvah.org podcast. The mikvah organization has been dedicated to the education and resources for Jewish family life since 1975-5735. You can support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. Thank you for your support and enjoy today's recording.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another mikvah.org podcast. I'm Chassi Rifkin, and I'm your host for today. We had a very long cycle of discussion on building a family. We went through the sichos of the Rebbe on the subject, on the importance of building a family. We went through the Maamar of Pru Ravu from two angles. And we went through the doctor going through many different methods of contraception, including FAM, which we'll discuss in detail today. And we went through with a Rav through all those methods to discuss halakhic concerns. And now we're just going to go a little deeper into the discussion of fertility awareness method. We know a lot of people have heard a lot about it. It's a recent buzzword. And as we did discuss this, and I'm going to encourage everyone who's listening to this to go back to our entire series on building a family to really give everyone the right context on the hashkafa of building a family and on the different methods that are there. But we're going to go a little deeper into fertility awareness method to kind of discuss what it is and what it isn't. So I'm grateful today. I have two amazing people for this discussion. Rivki Biarski, we are all familiar with, our certified nurse midwife and a mikvah.org teacher. We've had her many times. Welcome back. And we have Pessie Schwartz, who is also a college teacher, not under mikvah.org, in a different community, and also a fertility awareness educator. So hopefully between all of us today, we'll get a really good grasp on what fertility awareness method is. A few times, it might come up that there might be a halakha concern. We're not going to address halakha today. This podcast is for informational purposes only. You always need to go back to your own Rav for halakha concerns, but we will have the Rav address at the end some of the halakha concerns and what they are. Okay, so with me today are Rivki Biarski and Pessie Schwartz. Let's start for a moment by just introducing ourselves for our audience today, a little bit about who we are and what brings us to the table today. Rivki.
So hi, I'm Rivki Biarski. I am a nurse midwife here in Crown Heights, and I'm also a college teacher certified through mikvah.org. I'm joining this podcast in my role as a nurse midwife as someone who is passionate about education for women. And I really just want to make sure that everything is really hashkafically in line so that we are not looking in outside sources for information that we need. We really have it all within our community, and then we then take it to our Rav for individual guidance. So I'm really excited about this podcast. I think this is going to bring attainable information, relatable information, and information that we can then talk to our own Das Torah and see how that works within our personal lives.
Okay, thank you. And Pessie.
Hi, my name is Pessie Schwartz. I am a certified fertility awareness educator. What that means is I did a 2-year intensive training on everything, not just about the fertility awareness method, but everything around it, how our hormones work, how our cycles work, different conditions that can come up, different situations, different ways of charting our cycles, and different ways that can help us in our life, which we'll get into. And I'm also a certified college teacher, and I'm also a life coach. So I kind of weave the three together when I work with women in the community, because all these things are so closely related. So I work with women one-on-one. I do group courses and classes, and I really love teaching with information.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's begin. Let's backtrack. We're like coming in with an assumption, I would say, maybe erroneously, that everyone has heard about fertility awareness method or everyone's already using it for one use or the other. But let's backtrack, because before we decide whether how we're using it, we need to understand what is this. So if you can give me your definition, what is fertility awareness method? What is it?
So to put it very simply, just look at the words fertility awareness. It's awareness of our fertility. I guess some people still have the assumption that we can get pregnant any day of the cycle. That is not true. There is this fertile window, a specific window of about 5 to 7 days, individual to each person, but approximately. And that is actually when we can get pregnant each cycle. So what this method does is it helps us, because we're not all the same, we don't all have the same length cycles, we can actually figure out for ourselves through the signs of our own body when we're fertile and when we're not. And this is what this method helps us figure out. And then there are different ways we can use that information.
Okay. So we have fertility awareness. We're aware of what happens during our cycle, when we're fertile and when we're not. I know there's another like similar term called cycle awareness. Can you differentiate what do you mean by fertility awareness and what are we talking about when we say cycle awareness?
Yeah, so cycle awareness is a whole different concept. I mean, it's very related and it could be practiced very well together, but you can actually use cycle awareness without doing fertility awareness. You can do fertility awareness without doing cycle awareness, though it probably will overlap in some ways. Cycle awareness is being aware of our cycles, which what that means is that we are not meant to be the same every day. As women, we move like the moon, men move like the sun, so we have a different rhythm. And sometimes we have this expectation of ourselves, like the world is sort of this like masculine dominated world. And we kind of expect ourselves to show up the same every day. And we're like, why am I tired today? Why am I not functioning the same? Or what's wrong with me? And when we can have that compassion for ourselves and actually understand that our bodies work differently. And we have times of the month where we are more energetic and more in the mood of certain things. And then we have times where we are not. And it's totally fine to like rest on our, when we're menstruating, because that's exactly what our body is meant to do. And then we have more energy at ovulation or different points in our cycle. So really honoring the different phases of the cycle, that's more the cycle awareness piece. And fertility awareness is just the physical tracking of our body signs to see when we're fertile.
Okay, thanks. So I understand that cycle awareness means that, you know, awareness of what each phase is doing with our bodies and how we can move through the month. Fertility awareness is knowing which part of the month is our most fertile window. Okay, so tell me a little bit about how it works. Like, how does it work to have this awareness of your fertility?
Yeah, so there are, first of all, just to put out there are different types of fertility awareness-based methods. So there are many ways of doing this. Some are more effective, some are less effective. So it's important for people to know that, because sometimes the effectiveness will be lumped together. Like you'll see a source somewhere that says fertility awareness is 76% effective. And that is true for one type of method, which is called the rhythm method. And that is less effective than, let's say, the symptothermal method, which is what I teach. And that is actually tracking our signs in real time of what is actually going on in my body. So I kind of compare it to, let's say you're comparing the weather forecast of what will it rain tomorrow, which, okay, that might be accurate or not, versus standing outside right now and it's raining. That is a lot more accurate because it's actually happening in the moment. So that's kind of the difference of some methods will be predicting or saying what might happen, which we don't know what our body will end up doing. We can guess, but that's not the same accurate as what is actually happening right now and how can I understand the symptoms right now. So there are different types of methods. The method that I teach is the symptothermal method. That can be very effective, but
say that again.
Symptothermal method. The name comes from the fact that it's symptoms. So we look at symptoms in our body, like cervical fluid and cervix position. And then thermal is temperature. So we take our basal body temperature, which means our first temperature when we wake up in the morning. And those are the two signs that really are the basic foundation of the method. And that's what we spend a lot of time learning because it is a skill to learn. It might be overwhelming at the beginning, but then once you get the hang of it, it's about 2 minutes a day of just doing it practically.
Okay. So before we get, so you have a specific method and we'll get into that in a moment. Fertility awareness, I want to just backtrack. We said, you know, it's about what, you know, when we're fertile in the month, and it can have a variety of uses, right? Mm-hmm. So one use might be to know when we're fertile and become, and hopefully carry a child. One use might be to know when our fertile window is with a heter from a rough to have, you know, to use it as a contraceptive, which then brings up some halakhic concerns. Of course, you're going to listen to the Rav at the end of this podcast. We'll come up with everything that we're talking about. How effective is this method, Rifki?
I just want to talk about effectiveness for a minute, because this is really very important for anyone who's looking at any form of contraception. There are two numbers that we use when we're talking about contraception. Okay, the first one is something called perfect use, and the second one is called typical use. Now, in perfect use, that's the number that people like to kind of throw out when we're talking about any form of contraception. Oh, it's 98% effective. Oh, it's 87%, whatever. Whatever the number is, if this is a method that really they're trying to connect to, this might be the number that they're really looking at. And that's perfect usage, which is a very nice number to understand. It is also important to understand that we are people with people situations and people variations. And so there's second number that we really should look at, and that's really a number that's even more important, is the typical usage. And the typical usage is generally going to be a little bit lower than the perfect use. So when you're looking at a form of contraception, it's very important to understand that you are probably going to fall closer to the typical use number than the perfect use. So always look when you hear a number, whether it's perfect use number or typical use number, and that will help you make a decision whether this is the right method for you. The second thing I always tell my patients, and this is also very important, is to flip the statistics. So if someone says, oh, 98% effective or 92% effective, that sounds like a really high number. But imagine I told you that it's 92% effective. That means that 8 out of 100 women are getting pregnant. You're like, oh my gosh, I really can't be part of that 8. Or, oh, that still sounds like a great number. That's a very important thing. Now, again, I want to tell you, like, it's important that we have this discussion with whoever, you know, our dastire is, whoever our provider is. These are discussions that we want to make sure that we understand with clarity about how important it is from a halachic perspective or a medical perspective for us to not get pregnant at this time or to get pregnant. So those are important things that we need to just understand the numbers before we even understand whether a method is right for us or not.
Okay, thank you, Rifki. So that, yes, that's getting into, you know, fertility awareness as a method of contraception. I'd like to backtrack for a moment though, Pessy, because we talked about fertility awareness being, you know, aware of what our fertile window is. You have the symptothermal method. We first need to be aware of what when we're fertile, and then we're deciding what we're doing with that knowledge. Okay, so one thing that, you know, we talked about in the fertile window, there's going to need to be some sort of other form of contraception. We talked about speaking to the Rav and to your medical provider about that. But I want to just reiterate that not all Rabbanim are on the same page of exactly what type of contraceptive methods might be acceptable during this fertile window. So just because this is an informational purpose podcast, I'll just reiterate that someone should listen all the way to the end, hear everything the Rav has to say about different halakhic concerns that come up here, and also check with your own Rav regarding what type of method someone would be using during the, you know, during your fertile window for backup, and ensure that this is going to work for you before you invest all the time and energy and effort into learning exactly how to track your days with the symptothermal method. So I guess you can explain, I guess, the science behind it or how it works practically for this method. And then, you know, and then we'll go into how it's used, which will then bring us back to what Rifki said about effectiveness.
Yeah, sure. I just want to add also one more use that we have out of fertility awareness, which is actually understanding our health better. So some people might not even do it for any contraception or conception. They might just want to understand what's going on with their hormonal health, which is another huge benefit that we can get out of it. So, and that from that, we can see, okay, let's understand our fertility, and that's how we can see how this can help us. So we only see our period. We think that's the main part of our cycle. It's not the main part of our cycle. The main part of our cycle is ovulation. That's what all our hormones are working out for. That's what our hormones are at the highest. That's what everything, the whole cycle is gearing up for. The possibility, the potential of, you know, a pregnancy, conceiving, that's the whole goal of the cycle. And ovulation is only one day. We have one day where an egg is released. So if it would be just about the egg, we can only get pregnant one day of the cycle. That would be much simpler in so many ways. I mean, depends which way you look at it. But it's not just about the egg. There are other factors involved with fertility. And a big factor is cervical fluid. So cervical fluid is a really important part of our fertility. It actually, this is what helps the zera reach the egg. Without that, it would be really hard for pregnancy to even happen, for conception to even happen. So it's a big part of our fertility. So when we track our signs, cervical fluid is one of the signs that we track. And what we're looking for specifically is, we might have different types of fluids throughout the month. Some are a little bit fertile and a little bit more fertile. What I mean by that is they're all fertile, but there are different qualities of fertile. And this is what I teach more in depth in my classes, to differentiate and understand where we're at in the cycle. But the main thing to know is when we open the fertile window is when we start seeing fertile cervical fluid. And that is where we're in that space where we can potentially get pregnant because of the cervical fluid. Literally, cervical fluid is our fertility. It's the biggest sign in our bodies.
So the cervical fluid is what's carrying the zera towards the egg? Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, that's what makes it fertile, because it's actually making it possible to happen. Yes, that is like the transportation system. It's more than that. It's providing nourishment and warmth and helping it survive actually for about 5 days. So that's why we can be fertile a lot more than just the one day that our egg is surviving, because the 5 days before or so, depending on the person, is when our cervical fluid is active and, you know, keeping everything thriving for the time when the egg is released. So, you know, like even if ovulation is 3 or 4 days later or 2 days later, conception is still possible.
Okay. So,
and then with temperature, what we do with the temperature is we confirm that ovulation actually happened. So, I'll bring in the hormones for a second, and I hope it's not going to be too confusing for people, but it's important to understand. So the two main hormones of our cycle are estrogen and progesterone. Now, estrogen is the hormone that helps us get pregnant. Progesterone is the hormone that helps us stay pregnant, or once we conceive, it helps everything else happen, implantation and all the other stuff that happens afterwards. So when we're in the first half of the cycle before ovulation, we're in the estrogen phase. And that is actually what makes cervical fluid. Estrogen is what produces cervical fluid. So when we see cervical fluid, we know we're before ovulation. We know we're having estrogen in our body. When we, once we ovulate, we have a new hormone that we're only we only have if we ovulate. So this hormone is only there if we have healthy ovulation, a regular ovulatory cycle, is progesterone. And progesterone actually raises our body temperature, because if you think about it, what does progesterone do? It creates a warm environment for a potential baby to grow. So that little slight raise in temperature is something that we can catch with the basal body temperature, this first temperature in the morning before we get up, before anything else can affect our temperature. That first temperature can be raised slightly once we ovulate, and there are specific rules to figure out exactly, you know, when we're, if it's a real temperature shift, and you know, all that stuff that we go into the actual rules when we learn the method. But the higher temperature is a reflection of progesterone in our body. So it's something to understand with this method, is it's not just random rules. It's actually looking at the science of our body. When we have estrogen, we make cervical fluid. When we have progesterone, our temperature is higher. So tracking these two signs is what we're tracking, this hormonal pattern of gearing up for ovulation and then confirming that ovulation actually happened. That confirming is really important, because sometimes our body gears up for ovulation, and then for whatever reason, maybe we're very stressed out, maybe we're traveling, maybe we're not feeling well, our body is not going to feel safe to actually ovulate, and it will be delayed. And then we won't know if it actually happened or not. We only do know if we confirmed it with a temperature.
Okay, so two things I'm hearing is that, first of all, I think you're just taking a moment to say how amazing our bodies are and how intricate every detail in this process is, the way Hashem created us, number one. Number two, we talked about checking our temperature in the morning. I want to just bring to awareness for people that could raise some halakhic concerns, and the Rav will address them towards the end. So what I'm hearing from you is that the symptom thermal method, if I'm going to just restate it for, you know, to make checking for my own understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's the symptom thermal method is that we're basing the first half of the month, we're checking our cervical fluid to know when we're entering our fertile window, and then we're checking our temperature to see if ovulation occurred.
We're always checking both.
Maybe after the fact, is it going to help us to know that our temperature went up?
Yes, first of all, for health, to know that you're ovulating in a healthy range and that your body is working and your cycle is working. But also, even for practical purposes, if you're using this for contraception, you know that you're out of the fertile window. Even if you're using it for conception, you know that you're out of the fertile window. Like, either way, you know that the fertile window is closed. Like, that's what helps you close the fertile window. And I also will say, from the methods perspective, I know everyone will ask their own question about this, but even if you skip temperature on Shabbos, you can still keep relying on this pattern, because it's fine if we skip once a week. We're looking at patterns. It's not about making it specifically every single day. If we see an overall pattern of from lower temperatures to higher temperatures, even if one day here or there is skip, it's still fine.
Okay, so fertility awareness is being aware of our fertile window. We brought up a few ways that this can be used, right? Number one is, if you actually would like to become pregnant, it lets you know when your fertility, when the odds of that happening are the highest. If it's going to be used as a form of contraception, even though you're not actually taking anything, right? But if it's going to be used for contraception, it's going to require speaking to a Rav, which the Rav will address towards the end in detail. And number three, you said it's important, even if you're not trying to do either one of those things, but you want to just check for your health. So I guess I'm going to go to that one for a moment. I feel like it's the only one we haven't covered in any other forum.
Can I just clarify for a second? You were saying that cervical fluid is the first half and temperature is what we check in the second half. We actually check both throughout the cycle. It's just what we notice in the changes. We'll notice more changes in the cervical fluid as we open our fertile window, and we'll notice also changes afterwards as it dries up, but then we'll also notice our temperature going up. And that.
So someone using this method is checking every single
day? It's a daily practice. It's a daily practice. It's about 2-3 minutes a day. Once you get the hang of it, it's really like you brush your teeth, you get up in the morning. Like, it's a routine that you can get used to, but it is a learning curve. Like, once, when you learn in the beginning, it can be a lot. It can be overwhelming. And I want people to know that. Like, when I do my one-on-one packages with clients, it's a 4-month package. Like, literally, we do 1 month of learning all the material, then we do 3 months of follow-up, because that's the really important part of actually practicing it. Checking in with your chart once a month, having that messaging support back and forth, because that is where you're actually learning and getting the hang of it. It's a process. It really is a process. And then the more you practice, you have the skill for life.
Okay, so you have this skill of being able to practice it daily, in order to see, you know, the cervical fluid and the temperature. And between those two things, it's giving us a window into our own health. I'll say that the one area we haven't really focused on, which I want to ask about, is, okay, so now you're doing this for your hormonal health. And then what are you going to do with that practically? What can you do with that information?
So when it comes to health, for example, let's say someone doesn't have a regular cycle, as an example. They don't know when they're ovulating, right? If you have a regular cycle, again, it's not the same accurate as actually tracking, but you can guess, you can assume that you're probably ovulating somewhere in the middle. If you have a longer cycle, or, you know, things like PCOS or irregular cycles, that's where this can be really helpful to actually track what's going on, what your hormonal patterns are like when you're ovulating. Because a lot of people are ovulating, but they're just told they're not because it's not falling in the regular range. So this can give a lot more insight into your own health and your own body, and you can have that information for yourself. It also gives us information about, like we said, it's reflecting estrogen and progesterone. So progesterone is our hormone after ovulation, and that's called the luteal phase. Sometimes there is a shorter luteal phase or something called the luteal phase deficiency. For some reason, there's less. And Rifki, if you want to talk more about that, you probably have more information on that. But what the charting can help us with is to see what's actually going on. Like if someone has a short cycle, let's say, we want to know, is your follicular phase, the first half of the cycle before ovulation, short, or is your luteal phase short? Because that will make a difference based on, you know, what's going on in your body. And it will just give us a lot more insight.
So Rifki, as a midwife, can you pipe in with what you would actually do to help a woman if, you know, she's tracking it purely for hormonal health? What would she do if one of those phases are short?
So for informational purposes, I agree with Pessy. This is a great, you know, get in touch with your body, you know, find out what's happening. I think this is really, you know, without a doubt, something that can give women a lot of insight into their body. What would I do as a midwife? So I will just like remind you that like a midwife does have a specific scope of practice. So it would give me information to then see if it's something that I can help address through, you know, regular, normal, preventative, holistic type of perspective. But there would be like enough of information that potentially could get me enough information to then send someone to an endocrinologist or to a reproductive endocrinologist or to someone who specializes, because I will then have the information rather than me digging and trying to give questions. The person came in, look, I've been tracking, I know, I see. That gets you the help much, much quicker to where you need to go. And one of the things that Pessy brought up, which is really, really very important, is that if you're using this for information, remember that any provider that you're going to is not spending 2 hours of time with you unless you're paying out of pocket. Like, it's just not happening. And so there's a limitation to the visit that you're going to take, even if it's to the endocrinologist and whatever it is. But when you come in and you have this information, you are able to say, look, I've already done all the work. Here, let's go get the help that we need. And that really speeds up the process so much more rather than coming in for multiple visits, doing it piecemeal. And that's a really, really important thing. And I think that that's the part about fertility awareness method that people don't always realize, that it's not just contraception, right? So if you're using a contraception, it always has, you know, halakhic ramification, and it always has like this much more multidimensional part. But if you're just using it for information, just I want to know what's happening with my cycle, it's a really great thing to potentially be a stepping stone to getting you what you need to get.
So I want to just bring up though, like, and the Rav will address this, I don't want to get into what the halakhic concerns are, but even if you're just using this for information, or even if you're just using this for fertility, just please be aware that some of those things, like you have mentioned, checking the temperature, checking your cervical fluid, could bring up some halakhic questions. So we'll address that. The Rav will address that at the end. But it's not to fight, it's not being used for contraception, and then there's no Rav involved at all. No matter what way you do it, it's going to bring up some questions.
Right. And even more so if you're using it for contraception. And thank you for clarifying that, Fassi.
Okay. Right. So if you're bringing it for contraception, then of course, contraception, we know too. But let's just also remember that even if we are using this just for hormonal awareness, even if we're using this just to become fertile, please be aware. We've discussed this at length in our halakhic discussion on contraception with the Rav. We'll also address that at the end of this episode, of just some other halakhic things to be aware of when we're talking about FAM. Okay. So, Pessy, I know you do this, you educate people on this, you gave us a brief window into the symptothermal method, which I'm just going to restate it to make sure I'm correct. It's not beginning, end of the month, but the whole month, that we are basically checking our cervical fluid and checking our temperature. Is that all that it is? temperature and fluid, or is there anything else?
Really, it really is all that there is. There are some optional add-ons that people can do, like you can check your cervix position and also change it throughout the month. Something to understand is that our hormones work through our whole body. It's not just our cycle. There are different changes that people might notice. Like some people have ovulation pain, some people have different signs, that different things that happen for them throughout the cycle. They might tune in and notice. Like another thing, a really important piece of this practice is that we're tuning into our body. It's like, it's an embodied experience. You're going to notice things that happen for you. And you can actually put it in a note, in the note section on the chart of like, oh, I noticed that my mood is, you know, better today, or that I have more energy, or whatever it is. And you'll see cyclical patterns. It's really cool to start noticing that and see how we actually move in a cyclical rhythm. So you might notice, let's say, high energy at ovulation. And for you, it's not you can't rely on that to prove ovulation, but you can have it for yourself as like an interesting add-on of like, oh, I have my cervical fluid, I have my temperature, they're all adding up, and I also see this high energy, or I have ovulation pain, or whatever happens for you. And it's like an additional, you know, more information of like, you know, just confirming more of what you're seeing. And the cervix is an actual fertile sign, but it's optional, so you can track your cervix changes. Obviously, you know, make sure your fingers are clean and it's hygienic and all that, but it can also change throughout the cycle and give you a lot of information, but it's optional. It doesn't have to be done for this practice.
Okay. So obviously the fertility awareness method, as you said, it requires a learning curve. There's some time involved. So my question will be, and this might be obvious to those of you who are already like convinced that this is the way to go, but just putting this out there, why should I bother? What would be the benefit why would you encourage women to get in touch with their cycle and to do, you know, this effort to learn their hormonal cycle rather than using a different form of contraception? What do you see as a pro in this method?
Yeah, so most people come to this having already tried so many different things and they're like, I'm done. I cannot do hormones for whatever reason. It's not agreeing with me, or I'm not feeling good in it. And they just want a non-hormonal option, and they're ready to commit. Like, yeah, this is what it takes. Like, this is what I want for myself. That's where most
so it takes some commitment, but it's avoiding the hormones. So I know that there's going to be, you know, if someone needs to use hormones when you're listening to this, it's okay. Like there's not people who don't have any.
We have options for a reason.
Right. We have options for a reason. Thank you. But can you just, I guess, briefly tell us like why, what would be a motivation if someone didn't have any sort of bad interaction with hormones? Is there any reason why you would say avoid hormones if you can?
Yeah, so it's really a spectrum of what does bad interaction with hormones mean. There are physical side effects that people experience, but there are also like, there's a general sense, some people are like, I don't like how I feel on this, or I want to just experience how I feel on my own cycles. Like there are a lot of benefits to having our own cycles. It's not just from a health perspective, but from being connected to ourselves and being in a certain rhythm and moving through life a certain way. Like there are different, like for me, I'm very passionate about the cycle and how it affects us. So the cycle is suppressed in a lot of different forms of hormonal birth control. There are some that are not, like the non-hormonal option, like a copper IUD, does not suppress our cycle, which is actually why you can actually practice the fertility awareness method while you're still on the copper IUD. If you're not ready to get off yet, but you want to start practicing, you could still track your fertile signs, and then when you're ready, you can remove it at some point if you want. But in terms of hormonal options, it does suppress our actual hormones, our actual cycle. So some people just don't want that, even if it's not a crazy physical symptom happening, but like they just want to feel what their actual cycles are like. And they do, a lot of people do feel different. I'm not saying everyone, but some people have this experience of coming off the pill or coming off for hormonal contraception, like, I feel like a different person. I'm so happy I did that. And again, everyone will have their own experience with that.
Okay. So when we talk about, you know, pros and cons of this, we talk about fertility awareness can be used just to be in touch with your own health, to maybe identify some issues like PCOS, or like Rifki had brought up, some things that might fast track you if you need to go seek, you know, professional care, that you've kind of done the basic research. It's almost like, you know, I'm thinking about it from my perspective, right? If you're doing any sort of project and you need outside, you need a third party involved, the more work you do beforehand, the less time you're going to need to be working with that third party. So here it's, you know, so that would be one method, and that's obvious what the pros are, right? You're being aware of your own hormones, you're fast tracking it. If you're using it for your fertile window, it's also, you know, we understand what the pros are. It's basically being aware of when you're ovulating and, you know, trying to make the best efforts at that time to reach the goal that you want. But now let's talk about it. It's contraception. We know that there's many types of contraception. We had a very long series on it. So can we just address it now as a form of contraception? Halakhic concerns aside, we'll address that towards the end. What would be the pros and cons of using the fertility awareness method as a method of contraception? What are the pros and cons of that? Who is this for and who is it not for?
Yeah, sure. So the pros are, obviously, it's not hormonal. You have your own rhythm going on. For some people, that's a benefit. For some people, it's not. Some people want to, you know, loop their cycles or whatever. But it is a benefit of having our own cycle and not having a hormonal option. Another benefit is, obviously, you understand what's going on with your health. Even if the main focus was not to go to do this for health, even if you're doing it for contraception, you still have that benefit of understanding your health better. And it's also a very easy switch. So some people, like, let's say if you're doing contraception for a temporary amount of time and then you're going to try to get pregnant, you don't have to, like, get off of birth control, or some birth controls recommend a certain wait time. I don't know. Depends on what you're taking. Here, it's, like, a very easy switch from one second to the next, one cycle to the next. You can decide, okay, this is what, not decide, but, like, this is what we're ready for. And then you don't have to do anything. Your body is just doing the same rhythm. And all those months that you were avoiding pregnancy, you were still able to prepare your body for pregnancy, right? Like, from a health perspective, right, ideally it's good to prepare, like, as a preconception, to prepare our body to make sure we're in a healthy place. So you can do that while you're practicing this for contraception, and that would be an easy switch for that. The cons, obviously, the biggest one is that it's a commitment. It takes a lot of you have to learn the method, you have to know what you're doing. Also, in terms, I want to just bounce off what Rifki was talking about, effectiveness. It's a user-dependent method. And what I mean by that, when something is user-dependent, it really relies on how you practice it. So that's why there's a big range of effectiveness. There are studies out there that give you really high numbers, like up to 99.6%, and, you know, gives you perfect use and typical use. You have to know that how you practice it will affect how effective it is. And for some people, that's a big stress. I'm like, no, I don't want to take that on myself. So that can be a con. But also for some people, it's empowering. Like, oh, if I know how to do this properly, this can be effective for me. And it can even be comparable to other options of birth control and effectiveness. So it's very user dependent. What else?
Okay. So what I'm hearing mm-hmm. is that the pros are that you're avoiding the use of hormones, that you can be, you know, working with your Rav, and from 1 month to the next, it's not something that needs to be long-term, short-term. It's a little bit more flexible.
Yeah.
The cons are that it does require commitment. So a person does need to reflect a little bit inwards and just know about their own personality and their own lifestyle, whether they're going to be able to have that commitment in order for it to actually be effective. Because
yeah.
It can have really great effectiveness if you're using it correctly. But if you're not being so committed, it might not be quite as effective. So I'll put it out there that if someone's in, you know, if pregnancy can be life-threatening, they might need to consider that, whether...
Right,
whether,
absolutely, yeah.
Okay, Rifki, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, so I do want to bring up 2 points. I think that, Pessy, you kind of, like, are addressing this, but I want to just be very clear. Like, people have to be honest with themselves about, like, their personality, their lifestyle. It really just isn't for everyone. And I just want to really bring that up again. Like, it sounds amazing. There's minimal risk, and it's you getting in touch with your body, and, you know, you might really, you know, learn so much. But using it as a form of contraception, I really do want to say, is not for everyone. That being said, I do want to also bring to people's attention that there is an FDA approved app that comes with a thermometer and a ring and a watch. That you can use to help if this is something that you and your provider and your Rav have decided that is the right thing for you. You can actually look up something called Natural Cycles. Natural Cycles is the app, and you can order the Aura ring or the watch.
I know we talked about, what are you doing with the watch and a ring and a monitor? Yeah, we're doing temperature check.
It's going to help you measure your temperature check. So if someone's like, look, I'm just all over the place, I can't do it, you can wear the ring overnight, you can wear the watch, you can use, you know, their regular thermometer, but it just syncs with their app. And this is an FDA approved app. That means that it has gone through rigorous checks, and it, you know, it works fairly well. And the numbers on the app itself is 93% effective, which is, you know, comparable to a lot of other forms of contraception.
So that's only for the temperature checking part of charting.
I have thoughts on that. Yeah. So yeah, there is that option, and it could work, especially if you want that, like, feedback from an app. But there is something, first of all, it only works with temperature. So you can incorporate cervical fluid along with it if you want to make it more effective. But the app tells you when you're fertile based on temperatures. So you didn't confirm ovulation. You don't know if you're going to ovulate. It's just saying, oh, your temperature is lower, so you're probably fertile now. We don't really have that much information. Like an app, basically the premise of the method that I teach is that we know our bodies better than an app can. An app, as much as the greatest technology is, and there are some great apps out there and great technology assisters to this method, we're always going to have the best information directly from our body. So what Natural Cycles does is, yeah, it does the same thing that we could do ourselves, take our temperature, and it does have a good algorithm set up where, you know, if you're like, I can't do any of this, I just want an app to tell me, then good, that's a great option for you. But if you want to know that you're smarter than an algorithm and that you can actually know what's happening in your own body and have more understanding of your cervical fluid patterns and your temperature patterns and your whole fertility, an app is not really going to do them the same way, any app. But yeah, from the apps out there, Natural Cycles is one of the better options.
Okay. You know, Rifki, you mentioned the app, and as you said, it only does one part of it, temperature checking, not the cervical fluid. But Rifki, could you just tell us a little bit more about why, you know, I know from the calendar app, for example, it's only as helpful as the information you put in. So it doesn't change the fact that you need to understand what fertility awareness method is or what you're doing, but why would the app be helpful for somebody?
So the app can be helpful for someone who is like, look, I'm just not disciplined enough to take a pen and paper to write everything down. What basically you're doing is you're putting on a ring and you're wearing it throughout the night. It's tracking your temperature for you. You can wear a watch. It's tracking everything. And it's smart technology. So it's automatically inputting everything into the app for you. So you are not doing any of the nitty-gritty details. That also kind of like helps us a little bit with some of the other things that, you know, that Rabbanan have brought up. Which is like, are you really supposed to be taking a temperature before you wash an egg of us or saying my Dani? Like, you just took away that whole entire challenge because you're not actually doing anything. It's all inputting. So for certain people who this might be what is holding them back from exploring FEM as an option, I just want them to know that there is an option to track a temperature through smart technology that is FDA approved. That is great. You know, obviously in conjunction with the education and the hand-holding and all the other things, but if that detail is what's holding you back, this can be a good option.
Okay, so in the symptothermal method that Pessy talked about, you need to have cervical checks and temperature. This app is going to help streamline your temperature checking. It's going to make it more automatic. You don't have to take out your notebook and pen every day. It's happening without you thinking about it, and you're kind of relying on it, but you're still going to need to do cervical checks separately.
Yeah, what I was basically saying to be careful of is the app will predict when you're fertile, which is a prediction. So just to know that that's not the same as actually knowing where you are in your cycle when you're fertile with cervical fluid. But I will say the Uru Ring, which is connected to the Natural Cycles app, you can actually use that separately as well. And there's also something called a temp drop, which is an armband that you put around your upper arm. And those are both sensors. Those are both automatic. They take your temperature automatically throughout the night. You wear it throughout the night. So either the ring on your finger or the temp drop. And
temperature app? Temperature what?
Temp drop. It also has its own app that it syncs to. And the benefit of that is, like we were saying, if you don't want to take your temperature every morning, this takes your temperature throughout the night and figures out your basal body temperature for you. And then you could put it in your own chart as well. Like if you're tracking on an app like Read Your Body, I know I didn't mention that. Read Your Body is also a really great app that just doesn't predict anything. You just put in the information. Instead of a paper, you put it on an app, like a digital paper chart. So whether you put it in an app, in your app or in your paper chart, you're taking that temperature from something that was taking it throughout the night, so you don't have to wake up and take your temperature first thing in the morning. And it's great for postpartum. If your baby was up all night and you don't have an accurate temperature reading, or if your lifestyle doesn't allow for it, it can be a great option.
If you don't wake up predictably at the same time every single day,
then your temperature can be affected. Yeah, right. There was so much we didn't mention. Well,
okay. Ways to streamline or make it easier to take your temperature daily. Nothing is going to make it easier for you, though, to do cervical checks. You're going to have to be committed to doing that.
Yeah, and I will say, though, just to make it really simpler in the beginning, if you want to not be pressured about cervical fluid checks, you can assume that you're fertile from mikvah. If you have roughly regular cycles, like monthly cycles, you can assume you're fertile from mikvah and then take your temperature. And then once it goes up, you confirm your temperature went up and you confirm ovulation and you close your fertile window that way. You can still be mindful of your cervical fluid, but if it's too much of a pressure to take on everything at once, a good place to start is just with temperature.
Okay, so this is a helpful tip for like how to streamline it. But of course, like we all feel equally, me and Rifki and all of us we all feel equally. This conversation is not enough for you to
Absolutely.
Go and in your life.
I see this clearly. Yeah, there's okay? so much more.
So, like you said, there's so much more to say, and we can go on and on, but this doesn't replace either reading a book properly or doing more research on it or taking PESI's class, because there's much more to know about FAM and how it's actually going to work in order to implement it in your life. So if, you know, this gave you enough information to say, hey, I want to speak to my Rav and see if this is right for me. I want to speak to my doctor and see if this is right for me. Then please be aware that you definitely need more knowledge before saying, okay, this is what I'm going to be relying on this month. This is what I'm going to be doing. Okay. And always look for educators that are going to help you, you know, weigh this option as one option within a bigger pool of options so that you're sure that, you know, this is the right option for you. Okay. So we have an app that can help us check temperature. It's not going to help us check the cervical fluid. So now we are, you know, we talked about fertility awareness, that basically we're using our temperature and we're using our measurement of cervical fluid to understand the estrogen and progesterone in our bodies, to understand whether we're in the luteal phase or the follicular phase of our cycle. But now what? How is that? This is a podcast on mikvah.org. So this is obviously talking to the FRUM community. If you're using this as contraception, then what are you doing with this knowledge now? What are you doing with this knowledge now of when you're actually in your fertile window? Now what?
So the regular options that you might have in general, but you only have to use it in the fertile window. So any non-hormonal contraception that you have a heter for, you just have to use it when you're actually fertile. And I do want to say also, when we're practicing this, we want to give it at least, because it's a learning curve, we want to give it at least 3 cycles to really know your patterns and know what you're doing before relying on it and saying, oh, I confirmed ovulation, I'm not fertile anymore, I don't have to do anything now. Give yourself a little time, and then after 3 or so cycles, and check in where you're at. If you're comfortable with it, if you feel confident with doing this properly, this, if you're working with an educator, that's a bigger plus, obviously, because you get that feedback as well. Then you might be able to say, okay, after the fertile window, I don't have to use anything. But in the fertile window, you're always going to have to use something. And then the first 3 months also have that backup. But in terms of what the backup is, that's not my place as an educator. You figure that out with your own Rav, your provider, whoever, you know, however you would go about.
I thank you, PESI. I understand that during the fertile window, it's not going to be in your, you know, scope of practice to tell someone what to do. But based on our previous episode, we know that practically speaking, for a FRUM couple, the most commonly used solution during the fertile window might be a diaphragm or spermicide or a combination of that. So turning to Rifki as our nurse midwife here, if you could tell us, is there anything besides for the halakhic implications that the Rav will address later, is there anything else that someone should know when they're considering FAM as the method of birth control about using the diaphragm or spermicide during the fertile window?
Yes. So first of all, the halakhic perspective is not what we're covering here. So I want to be very clear. I'm not telling women use a diaphragm or don't use a diaphragm. However, if you are using a diaphragm, understand a few things. First of all, a lot of providers are very comfortable for most women prescribing something called the Kaya. Now, the Kaya is not a one-size-fits-all diaphragm. It's a one-size-fits-most. And if your doctor decides that that is the right fit for you, then it might be. Some women find it very, very comfortable. I do want to note for women who do have a diaphragm that the diaphragm is not a one-time fitting thing, meaning our bodies as women change regularly. You gain 7 pounds, you lose 7 pounds. By the way, that's all you need in order to get refitted to make sure your diaphragm's fitting. So how often, I don't know about the rest of you, but most of us fluctuate much more than 7 pounds up and down. So you might need to get a different size if you fluctuate as little as 7 pounds up or down. Did you have a baby? Did you have a miscarriage? Did you have a loss? Those are things that we would want to refit you for every single time. In addition, your diaphragm does have to be changed every 2 years. And women kind of like time slips by very fast before we refit ourselves for diaphragms. And so we have to also regularly check our diaphragms for holes. What if your kids got into the drawer, even if you think it's so well protected? You have to have some sort of maintenance for your diaphragm, and a good provider can fit you with a diaphragm. And just like any other medical procedure that you're doing, you're going to ask your provider questions like, how often do you fit for diaphragms? Were you trained to fit for diaphragms? How comfortable are you doing? Are you doing this, et cetera, et cetera? And then you'll decide if you have a provider who can fit you well. But it's not as uncommon in certain communities as you think. And you do not have to go to a special diaphragm fitter. If a regular provider is doing this and has the training, they can absolutely fit you for a diaphragm.
Okay. So just to recap, some things to keep in mind when utilizing the diaphragm after speaking to your Rav, of course, and the halakhic implications again at the end of this podcast. But right now, for the point of our conversation is that if someone's using a diaphragm, to be conscious and aware that it needs to be fitting and that it's not a one-time thing. Every 2 years it needs to get replaced, and fluctuations in your body, whether due to weight or whether due to a birth or whether due to a loss or parnasan, all those things together are things to basically be conscious of when using the diaphragm. That's not just by itself. I just, you know, can we talk about whether there's anything that you would want to include here as a nurse midwife? Is there anything you'd want to include here with spermicide, which might be used either in conjunction with or independent of the diaphragm? Anything that we should know about that?
So if you have repeated UTIs or repeated vaginal infections or sensitivity, you would be cautious or at least have a discussion with your provider whether either one is a good thing for you. And there are, you know, different considerations that you would just discuss on a personal level.
Okay. So bottom line is these conversations are going to be so individual based on your medical history and you as a person that it's absolutely going to have to go back to your medical provider. That's something to keep in mind when utilizing FAM as a method of contraception, that as a firm couple, you're going to have to use something during that fertile window. You're going to speak to the Rav about what that something is. And then you're also going to speak to the medical provider to see if those things are going to work in order to even know if FAM can work for you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Also, the effectiveness is going to go down to whatever you're using in the fertile window, because that's when you're fertile. That's where the effectiveness matters.
Okay. So I guess I have a question. I'm just, you know, I'm just sitting there listening to the audience and I'm just wondering, why bother with all the headaches? Like, what if I have to use a backup, if I have to use another option anyways during my fertile window, what am I gaining with checking my temperature, my cervical fluid every day? Me as in the audience, everybody listening. Why bother with it? Why bother with it if I have to use another option anyways?
So first of all, it's perfectly fine if you want to use something else the whole month. That's totally not a problem at all. What a lot of people find benefit with it is, first of all, a lot of these on-demand options, like a lot of non-hormonal options will be like something that you use each time again. It can either ruin spontaneity or just be a hassle for people to work with. And they're like, okay, if I use it all the time, I don't know. I don't want to do that. But if I just have to limit it to this like small window of time, like about a week or less, depending what your cycle is like, then I can do that. I can do that for a couple times, and then the rest of the cycle, I won't have to worry about it. So that's just like a framework. That's just a perspective that can be helpful for some people.
Okay. And I know you mentioned that, you know, you need a few months of tracking your cycle to make mm-hmm. this work. And I know I've also, you know, I've heard you mention, not in this podcast, but I'll just bring up a little bit about what you do. I know you've mentioned that you can help somebody postpartum too. So if someone's postpartum and doesn't have their cycle, how are they tracking when they're ovulating, since they may ovulate before their next period comes? How are you tracking anything during that stage?
Yeah, so postpartum is very different. I actually like do separate classes on that. It's just a lot more involved, and it is a bigger commitment. Like, people should know that. It's harder to learn it postpartum. Like, if you're starting out the first time, again, if you're very committed and you want to do this, it's possible. But also don't be so hard on yourself if it's like, you know, you're after a baby and it's a lot, like maybe this is not the time, and you can always come back to it later. If you have tracked your cycles before, then it's a lot easier. You know, you have some reference of like what your fluids might look like and what your patterns might look like. So you have experience with the practice, so it might be a little easier. So there's two ways this can go. Either this can be very easy. Let's say you're nursing and you're completely dry. Like, you know, you check your cervix, whatever, you check if there's cervical fluid and there's nothing, because nursing really dries that up. And that's very simple. Like, you see that it's working for you. So it's not just like we assume that nursing keeps your cycle at bay. You actually see it because you know how to track your cycle. So that's like the easy way. Then there's sometimes people do have like interesting patterns. Like, they see something or they're like confused. So that can be confusing. There are specific guidelines that I teach about how to track your cervical fluid postpartum, that there's a certain science to it. There's a certain, you know, there's different like rules that we apply specifically in this phase to make it easier, to make it more discernible, to understand better what you're seeing. But it's there's more involved. So if it's like you're the type of person that you've nursed for a long time and you don't see anything, this can be really good for you as a confirmation that you're not fertile. If you have different funny things going on, then it might be overwhelming and just, you know, make it more confusing than it needs to be. So it really depends on what's going on for you.
Okay. We mentioned, I believe I said this, but if not, you know, we can, you'll let me know if I said, but if you talk about cervical checks, please be aware as well, you know, just checking every day can bring up some halakha concerns that the Rav will address in detail afterwards, but we need to just be aware, you know, the temperature checking, the cervical checking, those are all things that can bring up some halakha concerns. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Pesty, for addressing how this can work postpartum. And thinking about the full cycle of a woman's, you know, years of the going through a cycle, I'm wondering, Rifki, as a midwife, if you could address what are your thoughts about using fertility awareness method during, you know, a woman's 40s when she might be approaching perimenopause?
So I think that's a very interesting question, because what I found is the women who turn to me in their 40s want either of two things. They either want no more periods, they don't want to deal with it, they've dealt with it for long enough, or this is actually what I find more frequently is as they're hitting menopause and they're getting to that stage, they actually really want to connect to this part of their body. They want to understand it. They want to kind of like say a nice goodbye to it and feel connected. So I think that there's value to learning the chachma, quote unquote, of your body at this stage, just kind of to feel like you've taken ownership of it in a way that you maybe weren't able to in your 20s and 30s. However, that being said, that's just, you know, getting in touch with your body, understanding your body, you know, more of the cycle awareness things that we've discussed. However, I will say that as you reach perimenopause and really get into the menopausal stage, what happens is there's tremendous, tremendous fluctuation. And there's a lot of changes that might not translate so well, especially to someone who's first learning this method. So if it's something that you do want to do, it would have to be an individual decision. And I would go back to what I've said, which is make sure that you have someone who can really coach you about whether it would be right for you in this particular stage of your life. So it's not just figuring out halakhically and figuring out medically if this is the right approach, but also have some handholding, because as you reach menopause, the fluctuation is really, really that great and that varied that you would want to really have someone in your space guiding you with all the more outlying type of situations you might find yourself in.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is that it could be something to consider in your 40s, but like, so to speak, be forewarned or forearmed that there's going to be a greater range of fluctuation in your cycles, and it might not be as easy a learning curve as someone who's starting out younger when learning this.
She might need but also you might even need handholding if you've done this for a while and now you're seeing changes in the norms that you're having. A lot of times people, you know, don't like the other symptoms that they're experiencing, like the night sweats and the hot flashes and the mood changes. And they might want to explore some hormonal options to really mitigate those type of things. And that will also affect it. So there's so many factors that are, you know, possible to come into this situation that it would be a very collaborative type of decision with some handholding as well.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So I guess, you know, if someone's in this age and stage, then just as every other stage, you need to consult your own medical provider, you need to consult with your Rav, and then really think about how this can work for you and to get that hand-holding guidance. Okay. I guess my next question is, I know that you are a fertility awareness educator, so let us know a little bit about, you know, if someone's listening to this and says, wait a second, I heard this whole conversation, I don't know what I should do tomorrow. So we're going to say that this conversation is for informational purposes to know what fertility awareness method is. But if you're going to use this specifically for your own body, you're going to need to go do a little bit more learning to use this, right? So you can go learn it online. You can find different courses, and Pessy offers courses as well. So tell us a little bit more about what you do and how someone will take the information they heard from this podcast. Can they go use it tomorrow? They need more information. Where would they go?
No, you need definitely more information. We did not cover what you need to know. We just explain what it is and how it works. But to really do this properly, you have to learn how the method actually works. You have to learn the different techniques of checking cervical fluid and basal body temperature. There's a specific technique to each one, and also how to put it properly in a chart and how to interpret your chart and what you're seeing. So I teach that one-on-one. I teach that in group courses. I'm actually giving a course in May So if you're listening and it's before then, you know, you can look at my website. Actually, I'm launching a website pretty soon in the next few days. Very simple, reclaimwomanhood.com. So that's going to have all the information. Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it, because I was doing these one-on-one four-month packages, but basically in the group, what I just do is I teach it in a group setting. So instead of everyone learning the information individually, you can learn in a group, and then you still get your private one-on-one follow-ups, like 3 months of follow-up that I would do in the private package. I offer that as an option to add on to the group course. So it's 1 month of learning. We meet once a week for 4 weeks. We go over all the material. We have discussions, questions, answers. It's really nice. And then you learn everything you need to know. But really, the way I teach, I really try not to do it in an overwhelming way, because I know this is overwhelming for a lot of people. So I just give you the information. I also give you the tools and support needed to actually know how you can implement this in your life. And then after that, you can have the 3 months of follow-up support if you really are ready to start tracking and you want my eyes on your chart and my feedback and support, so that you really, you know, get off on the right foot and have this for life. That's like really the best way to learn it.
I do want to just add that for anyone who is considering this and has already consulted their RUV and their provider that this is the right method for them, I would encourage them to go to someone who does know, because it can be confusing as you're learning to do it. So it might seem like a little bit of an expense, but having the eyes on it, it's not, you know, complex material, but just imagine learning to, you know, smear peanut butter and jelly when you don't even know what a knife is. It's kind of like that. So having someone to, and that's really the role of a fertility awareness method educator, is to just handhold you through the beginning of the process. And they can actually do that better than your provider, because your provider knows the general large, you know, brush strokes of this, but they're not going to have the time to handhold you. So if you decide with your RUV and your provider that this is the right method for you, this would be a good next step.
Okay, so I'm just going to say it again, reclaimwomanhood.com is your website. You're offering a course in May. So if this is, you know, if you're listening this, I know this podcast might be up for a long time. So we're talking about May of 2024, which is like ER Tufts and Pate dollar.
There will be more in the future, though.
You always go to reclaimwomanhood.com to find out when another session is, if for Pessy to go through a month of individually educating you on how to practically do these cervical checks and temperature checks and how to utilize fertility awareness in your life with the handholding that Rifki had mentioned. And that was where you would go for more information on this. So I guess in conclusion, as we wrap up this conversation, is there anything else that someone would need to know? You know, we talked about fertility awareness. It's we're like going in with a magnifying glass onto one method that's commonly used as contraception. It's also used for fertility awareness to get pregnant. It's also used for, you know, understanding your body and hormones, right? But we took a magnifying glass onto this one method based in our larger series on building a family to talk a little bit more about what it is and what it isn't, who it's for and who it's not. Is there anything else you would want everyone to know about this?
Just that this is something that you have to choose consciously. Don't do it just because it's a trend or because you hear a lot of buzz around it. Like, this is a lifestyle commitment, and it's amazing, rewarding for so many people, but know what you're ready for and know if this is for you. Like, look at the different options, look at the pros and cons, see what you're ready for. And choose it. Really, the choice is the biggest part of it.
Okay. So the choice is the biggest part of it, but go in with your eyes open, understanding that it is a commitment. It could be rewarding. It is a commitment. Rifki, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yes. I also wanted to add that as great as all these fertility educators are, you can access this information in other ways. There are books that you can read if that's your style. It is accessible online. Nobody's gatekeeping this knowledge. You know, like, this is open and there, like, you can access it if you want to. And you can do more research before you even go and speak to your doctora and to your provider. So I just also want to bring, like, sometimes I find that, like, fertility awareness, we kind of like, oh, you know, this is being held for you. It's not. It's right there. You're welcome to go and look it up. And there are lots and lots of resources on social media, on the internet, in the library, on, you know, Amazon books. Like, you can buy the books, read the books, highlight the books, take notes of the books, and then go ahead.
Right, right. But you had mentioned before that the advantage of
right,
along with people like Pessy, is that you have someone handholding you through the charts. Someone
that's extremely beneficial. But again, both ways. You have I want people to know that there are options here. That there's, yes, there's tremendous benefit to this, but no one's gatekeeping this knowledge. It's all there for you. And it's been there for a long time, like since the 70s, it's been pretty common knowledge. So it's not, you know, anything that your mothers didn't, you know, potentially have access to either.
Okay, so it's not a brand new method, but it's definitely gaining current rhythm. Yes, Bessie?
Yeah, you can absolutely teach this to yourself. Like Rifki said, there are some great books that I can recommend if you want, or if you want to put resources in the notes or something. And yeah, like basically, I actually love when people have the knowledge before and they read the books and they're like, okay, I really know what this is about. I'm ready to really commit and have the support with you. Those are my best clients because I don't have to start from scratch. But also that might be enough for you. Like when I give I give really affordable workshops, like every couple of weeks, like as of now, the last time was $27. I'm not sure what will be in the future. But my goal with that is to just put the information out there. And I always say, this might be enough for you. Like, I don't know your style. I don't know your learning technique. I don't know like how much information, how much support you need to implement something. It really depends on you. So like we said, it's a user-dependent method. It depends on you, how well you understand information, how well you can apply it, whichever way you learn it.
Okay, I have a question for you. I know we're supposed to be concluding, but I have a question for you. No, in Dr. Chudnov's session on fertility awareness method, you mentioned a few different ways that this is, you know, taught or used. Rifki had mentioned books and, you know, websites so you can access a lot of information. So I'm just curious as to, I know you've zoned in that you teach the symptothermal method. So why do you specifically teach that method?
It's okay. The most effective and practical. Like maybe there are other methods, like there is a method that does cervical fluid only that is also very highly effective, but it's hard in our community to do that. So okay. Having the temperature as a backup is really practical.
So you're saying you've gone through all these type of methods and you don't have this as the highest, most effective way. Yeah. So in a way, someone listening to this conversation, you could get a shortcut on your reading and your research because we've isolated all the other methods and said, we're going to focus on this, on the symptothermal method. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another question I have for you is there average, or is this the same for all women? Is the fertile window the same amount of days for all women, or is this completely individual?
There's an average. So think of it as your period, right? We say about anywhere between 3 to 7 days, but like every woman will have a different length of their period. It's like the flip side of our period. Some people even call this the golden period. Like we have some kind of flow, it's just not a period, and it can range between 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, wherever you are.
I guess my question is, you know, for some women, they get a regular cycle, you know, between 25 to 35 days. Rifki can correct me if I got those numbers off, but there are women who might get, you know, their cycle 3 times a year. So for the women who's getting their cycle 3 times a year, is their fertile window 3 weeks long?
Great question. Yeah, I love this question. It can be a few different ways. First of all, it can either be, maybe they're not fertile for a long time and then their body starts to get ready to ovulate. Or it can actually be there's something called cervical fluid patches. Like this is why temperature is actually important to see if you actually ovulated, because we can go through multiple attempts and for whatever reason, something's going on in your body with your health or with anything or whatever is going on, is your body's not feeling safe to ovulate. So it's, or it's just the thing like PCOS where it just takes a long time to ovulate. And this can happen like multiple patches, again, starting, stopping. So this can actually be frustrating. Someone like that maybe will say, this method is not for me. Like, it's just hard to keep, you know, opening and closing my fertile window. But, and then also on the flip side, they might say, oh, this might give me more insight and clarity into what's going on with my hormones. So it can go either way. But yeah, sometimes you might see these long patches and there are specific guidelines in the method that help you to navigate those as well.
Okay. So the more irregular your cycle, the more individual guidance for this method is going to be.
Yeah. That's a good rule of thumb. Yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you very much, Pessy, for all this information. Thank you, Rifki, for joining us today with your expertise and your midwife hat. And is there anything else you want to say as we close up? Nope? Okay, so I'm just going to reiterate reclaimwomanhood.com if you want more information on Pessy and her what she can offer to you individually guiding you. I'm going to, again, reiterate, we're going to hear from the Rav at the end of this conversation. Please stay tuned to listen to some of the halachic implications of fertility awareness that you just need to be aware of before you choose this as your method for anything, contraception, fertility, being aware of your hormones. There are halakhic things that can get brought up, but the Rav will address them. And again, this conversation, as always, I'm just going to put out the disclaimer again. We at MikvahDot.org are committed to offering you this amazing information, but it's, again, informational purposes only. It doesn't replace you consulting with your Rav. It doesn't replace you talking with your own doctor, understanding your medical history, understanding your medical risks or benefits, or what, where you're holding, to know what type of method is right for you. Okay, so we will now hear from Rabbi Tovia Kasimov in conversation with Mrs. Sarah Morozov in regards to the halachic considerations we need to have for FAM, which I've referenced many times in our previous conversation, as well as most commonly used methods for FRM couples during the fertile window, namely diaphragms and spermicides, to go through some of the halakhic implications so that we have our eyes, you know, in all the areas when considering this method. Rabbi Kasimov works under the Crown Heights Based In and Rav of the Beis Hara in Crown Heights. And please note, this conversation is excerpted from a full halakhic conversation on contraception that you could hear in full in episode number 167 as part of the Building a Family podcast series. So, Rabbi Kasimov.
When approaching this method, certainly it sounds great. You don't need to use necessarily any foreign things. You don't need to put in IUD. There's no concern of hormones. So obviously it is something which is very appealing to many. It's something which is natural. You get to know your body and you work with that. So certainly, you know, it's very appealing and many people would prefer such a method. So just a few pointers that we need to have in mind. Again, obviously, the first thing is, it's a shiloh. If you're doing any form of abstinence to avoid, to avoid ovulation, whatever it is, you're doing something with kavana to avoid getting pregnant, you should consult with your Rav. It is no different than any other birth control. Even though you may not be taking something, sometimes you may have to take something, but this is something that you firstly must be consulting with your halachic authority or whoever you consult with. That's rule number one. As was mentioned, some people use it for their ovulation. That's a different story. That's only a shayla of Hilchos Nidah. So this method, ultimately, as was mentioned, it includes many, many steps, tracking your ovulation in a natural manner, which means one would check their natural discharge, and based on how, whatever the guidelines are, would let them know whether or not they're ovulating. So rule number one is checking for these things could potentially pose a shayla for Hilchos Nidah. If somebody is checking using a tissue, this is just something to be aware of. If blood is seen, it is a shayla. So even though, you know, you may be ovulating, oh, you know, your period's coming in 14 days from now, it doesn't make a difference. If blood was seen right now on the tissue, this is something that you should consult with yourself to find out whether or not it's an issue. It does not mean automatically it's an issue. It doesn't mean automatically that it's not an issue. It means it's a shayla. That needs to be needs to be consulted with if it happens. And there's also shaylas on the Shabbos. If one is using a thermometer to measure their temperature, this is also a shayla for Hilchos Shabbos, whether or not one is permitted to do so. I'm not going to get into the yes and no's and if there's a specific situation, if somebody is a fela, sheyesh besakana, ebe sakana. That is for every individual case, but it is a shayla that must be brought up with the Rav. Now,
can I just ask you on the previous thing about checking the mucus? The woman is checking the consistency of their mucus, right?
Correct.
Well, if they're not looking on toilet paper, let's say they're looking just on their fingers, as far as blood in it.
It could be even worse sometimes. It could be even worse, or either equal or worse. It's definitely not an open answer.
And what if they find, what if they're checking on their underwear? It's not toilet paper, it's not their fingers.
So if they did not wipe directly only from that area and they found it as a stain, it has any, like the halachic status is any other stain which is found on a colored garment. If they used the colored garment to wipe the kavanah specifically on the area, this is a shayla that they must be consulted with.
So you're saying if you happen to see mucus on your underwear, it's like judged as a kesem, but if you wiped with the underwear in order to find the mucus on it, it will be a shayla.
Correct. Absolutely. If there's blood found, correct. This is a shayla. It would be similar to a kinuach, even though it's a garment and though even though that it is colored. So this is very important to have in mind. The next very common thing is, what happens if somebody is tracking their ovulations with this method and they realize that the ovulation is falling out, which is actually very common, by mikvahite? So if one is going to be using a diaphragm or spermicide or whatever other method that is included in the shaila, everything that we discussed previously, this was already touched upon, it is a shaila, a person has a heter to use this or not. What some people do, what something is recommended is, so they'll abstain. It's easier, right? There's no shaila that way. So the answer is, actually, there is a shaila. There are a few shailas that actually we briefly touched upon them. As we mentioned earlier in the beginning, there's a tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, that the night that a lady tivels, the husband should not abstain from her. It is very important. We take that tzava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid very seriously. That's number one. And number two, the consideration of the Shavuos Yaakov, the famous Tshuva of the Shavuos Yaakov, that we as well also quoted, that there is a Ruach Nistik HaSakala, a spiritual danger potentially, and there's no relations between husband and wife on the night of the mikvah. Again, if the Rav evaluates the situation and deems that there's a way around it, that's a different story, but the Shaila needs to be asked, and people need to be aware that this is something they should consult with their Rav about.
What about sometimes the days leading up to ovulation aren't during the Shavuot Kiyum, but they end up being past mikvah? A woman has a longer shaila, so she ends up having to abstain, not mikvah night, but she ends up having to abstain, let's say, 3, 4, 5 days, maybe the week after, like depending on her cycle. Is there anything we have to know about that?
Yes. So first of all the factors that we just mentioned, which is quoted in halachic sources. But on top of that, I actually forgot to mention one thing, which we mentioned earlier, also the potential mikshel that it has on the husband, especially in today's day and age. This is something we have to be aware of and not take lightly. Even though the husband may be a tremendous shemayim, that doesn't take away from the potential mikshel that it could cause. And this is something that we must be aware of, something to be discussed with it all. Now, if one has to abstain for a few days, so first of all, we know there's a few letters from the Rebbe, it's known that the Rebbe was definitely not pro such an haga, such a behavior. And again, for the above-mentioned reasons, sai in halach and sai of what it could lead to. So this is something, you know, if it happens, you must consult with the Rebbe, because there are the concerns of a mikshel, of a stumbling block for the husband, definitely grow much more, and the other factors as well.
Wow. Okay. There is, I don't know if it's true or false, but there seems to be a statement that the Tzemach Tzedek said that for us, we could always use a diaphragm or the barrier method. It's never a problem. Can you elaborate? Is that true? Is it not? What's the context?
Yes, there is a tshuva from the Tzemach. Okay, let's start with before the Tzemach Tzedek. There's a Gemara that discusses that certain people are allowed to be mishamish b'maich. What that means is they're allowed to fill up the area with a maich, with a, not necessarily cloth, a certain type of barrier which will prevent the zera of the husband to go inside. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara whether or not this is something which is permitted and it's not or not. There's a difference of opinion. There's the Shita of Rashi, there's the Shita of Taisvis. Okay, fine. Now, many Paiskim, including Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Chassam Sefer, were very, very machmir that no barrier method is permitted at all. There is a Tshuva from the Tzemach Tzedek, which is very mufursam, and the Rebbe quotes it in quite a few letters. There's a letter which is written to Rabbi Handel, that I've seen the actual letter itself, as well to many other Paiskim that consulted with the Rebbe, where the Rebbe quoted the Tzemach Tzedek in a very strong manner. Meaning you're afraid of other Paiskim, we have the Tzemach Tzedek. So now the question is, what does the Tzemach Tzedek mean? Does this mean it's a blanket heter that you can go and use a barrier method? Let's, for argument's sake, discuss now the diaphragm. Is it an open heter, a blanket heter, that you're always allowed to use it or not? So let's put things a little bit into perspective. The Tzemach Tzedek is discussing somebody who it's a sakada to become pregnant. And it is something which is a leniency. Many of today's Rabbanim argue that, one second, let's put things into perspective. In the times of the Tzemach Tzedek, there was only one method. There were others that were developed a little bit later. There was only, so to speak, one type of method, which was something similar to a diaphragm. So in such a case, there was nothing else available, that Tzemach Tzedek was able to use it. unlike other paiskim. Today, we have a way to avoid any shaila. And they would say that if the Tzemach Tzedek wrote his tshuva in the time when these other types, other methods of contraceptives are available, even the Tzemach Tzedek would tell you, obviously use the ones where it's glatt. There's no shaila involved at all. I don't want to say no shaila involved at all. What I mean to say, it's less problematic than using the barrier method. So this is an argument that many Rabbani Anash make. And it is a very, very valid argument, because if you have a method which has no less shilas attached to it, of course, even the Tzemach Tzedek would tell you that is definitely preferred. There are other Rabbani which feel very strongly that Tzemach Tzedek said this is okay, it means it's okay. So I'm not giving any achra one way or the other. This is something that there is a debate amongst Rabbani Anash, and this is something that everyone should consult with their own pesach, because there's a difference of opinion. So is it a blanket head from the Tzemach Tzedek? Depends which rabbi you're going to be consulting with.
Wow, thank you for that explanation, that clarification. Very important. Let's say somebody does have the heter to use the diaphragm or the cap, okay? What if when they take it out, they find blood in it? Or rather, maybe we should be informed that they should rinse it off without looking at it, because once you find blood on it, then what?
Yeah, so this is a very important point. This is actually something which is discussed in the tshuvas of today's Paiskim, so to speak, by Rabbi Feinstein and others as well. What happens if somebody finds blood on the diaphragm? So as we just mentioned a few minutes ago, if somebody finds the blood on an Uber ring, it's like a bedikah. So the same principle really applies to a diaphragm as well. It goes internally. So obviously, it's going to have the same halachic status as a bedikah. Now, we do have to bear something in mind, that the diaphragm is much more likely to cause a makkah than an Uber ring, just because of the physical makeup of the diaphragm. So it's very important, if somebody has reason to suspect that it's coming from a makkah, to actually see a bedekah. Of course, consult with your rav first. That's no question about it. But it's important to see the bedekah, because if you're not expecting your period and you actually did feel pain and there is reason to suspect it's from a makkah, it is more common that somebody may scratch themselves. It's something to have in mind. Again, it doesn't mean somebody can say it's okay without seeing a bedekah. It's just information for you to know that there is a resource that could help you if they find a makkah from the diaphragm.
Wow, thank you. Okay, I think we're ready to move on to spermicides. Are there any shilas when it comes to spermicides in general, you're killing sperm? And after that, we'll ask a few more specific shilas with different methods.
So when it comes to spermicide, if we were to rate the best, second best, third best, a spermicide, it is better than a diaphragm. I'm not getting into all how far we apply the Tzemach Tzedek, and that's for a different discussion. It's not directly connected to this, but spermicide actually is considered a better method. And the reason which is brought in the Paiskim is because the Zeta still gets to the place where it's supposed to when it's alive. After the Zeta has arrived, then something else happens and it blocks it. It doesn't block it, it kills it. So there's all discussion. Who is Mitzuba, who has the mitzvah of holding back from Ashkosa Zara, of destroying the Zara? It's a whole discussion in the Rishonim. Does it go on the husband? Does it go on the wife? Some Rishonim, some of the earlier halachic authorities hold that there is no prohibition on the wife. So therefore, if she puts it in and the Zara goes where it has to go, and only afterwards her action came into place to kill the Zara, it's much less of a problem than actually creating a physical barrier. Again, whatever I'm saying now has no bearing in halacha l'maisa. I'm just giving information. Everyone still must speak with their halachic authority.
And you talked about killing zera. You know, now there's, the IUD has the capacity to disable zera from traveling where it needs to go. So too, on the FEXI type of treatment, where it's not spermicide, you're not killing the sperm, but this, whatever it is that's inserted, makes it difficult for this or impossible for sperm to travel. So you're not actually killing the sperm. So it, like the FEXI brand, is that better in halacha than a brand that actually kills the zera? Or
Absolutely.
It is better.
Absolutely better, yes. Because it's a step much even better than that. It does not kill. The zera gets to wherever it would go naturally. And its mobility is just, it's not going to go any further. So that is certainly better than actually destroying the zona. Absolutely.
So Rabbanim, do Rabbanim mention it ever? Like, now, is it common nowadays for Rabbanim to mention if you're using sperm, if you only want to use spermicides because the doctor says it's okay, even though perhaps the risk of getting pregnant is, you know, higher than maybe using other methods. But if the doctor says it's okay, would the Rav say, if you're already using spermicide, if your doctor allows, I prefer you use Fexi? I mean, I don't think, you know, it maybe costs money or et cetera.
Exactly. So that's the catch. Many Rabbanim may actually be Miyayans. They may actually recommend to use it. But as you just mentioned, there is a financial factor involved. To the best of my knowledge, it is a method which is expensive and it is not covered by insurance. Again, this is to the best of my knowledge. It could be a week later after this year, it's going to change. I don't know. But for whatever reason, it's not covered by insurance, as far as I know. And that's why it is a struggle for many to be able to use this method, even though it's better halachically, for financial considerations.
Okay, so different methods of how spermicides are used and different shayas that come along with it. So let's say, is there in halacha, okay, is there an advantage or a disadvantage of the sponge versus film versus the applicator or the gel? Like, there's different ways of using the spermicide. Is there any halacha preferences, or it's all the same from the halacha?
The sponge specifically, it's a machlokes in the Paiskim. So the sponge would be on the bottom of that list of less preferred. Gel, film with an applicator, that's all the same.
Or the suppository. Now, I would assume with the applicator, you have to be careful not to look at it, because if you find blood on it, same idea of anything else that's inserted vaginally. So that we spoke about.
Right.
How about Shabbos? Are any of these, how do they be a film, sponge, applicator, any shyness of Shabbos when it comes to this? Or Yom?
Yes, absolutely. Especially with the applicator, with the gel as well. Any thick creams, and these are all shyness on Shabbos. I'm not going to get into the specifics because there could be different situations and different abundant may pass can differently. But as was just mentioned, Shabbos is a big factor. And when using any one of these methods, there could be shilas with Shabbos. There could be a way that it could still be used if it's done a little bit differently. This is an important factor that when you're beginning to use it, to consult with your Rav of how to go about Shabbos. And of course, just to mention another very important part, beyond Ilka Shabbos, going back to the actual application, even during the weekday of the spermicide or any other gel which is being used, if one is using the finger to apply it internally, as we mentioned previously, it's no different. It would have the status of a bedikah, even though there's no cloth or any other external thing. It's still something that goes internally. It's very important not to look. And if one sees, just like we mentioned previously, it is a big shayla. Same thing over here. You must consult with your rav on how to proceed.
You're talking about finding blood on your finger.
Or correct. Finding blood on the finger, yes, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to put again the disclaimer that we would have hoped that such a shear would never had to have happened, because people would go directly to the Rav, directly to the doctor. But because nowadays it happens to be the reality that there's a lot of information available in all different places. So with the Rav's advice, we made this shear so that people could get the information. But remember, please take the information, go back to your doctor, go back to your Rav. This is not to take any personal conclusions. It's just for information purposes.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi Kasimov and Mrs. Mraza, for concluding our conversation on FAM with all the halakha considerations to keep in mind. I'd like to just take a moment to wish everyone peace and clarity as they have the important conversations with the Mashpia, the Rav, and the medical provider after hearing all of these informational podcasts to then determine what is the right path forward for you as an individual. Wishing you all a wonderful day.
We hope you enjoyed today's recording. Please take a moment to leave a rating or a review to help others find the podcast. We welcome you to support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. For feedback, please email podcast@mikvah.org. Have a wonderful day.